This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a podcast of Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9, Australia's only LGBTI program focused on the horror and sci-fi community.
Warning, tonight's episode of Sci-Fi and Scream contains strong language. Listener discretion is advised.
They ain't never seen no on the horse before.
You and your come out right now with your hands over your head.
I wish to purchase one of your gals.
This language warning is brought to you by the letter N.
are Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. Thanks to Chatterbox again for all the chat, keeping up with the news and the views and things. And today is a very auspicious and special day here in Australia, and Sci-Fi and Squeam is broadcast from the Joy Studios here in Bourke Street. We would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of this land, the Wurundjeri people, and pay respects to their elders past and present, and of those elders of all Indigenous communities that are listening in here in Melbourne and right across Australia and the world. So yes, thank you. I'd also like to dedicate the show, because we are talking about Quentin Tarantino tonight, and we'll be playing a bit of an interview here and there about the man and what he's up to. And I want to dedicate the show to a dearest departed friend and comrade, Bob Bishop, who's gone almost 3 years now. He was a huge Tarantino fan, very passionate, both of us, about the films of Quentin's, and sadly he's passed on. And but basically I've probably spent about 17 years going through all the films of Tarantino with Robert, so it's I know he would have been very excited that I got to manage to do this interview this past week with Quentin Tarantino. So rest in peace, Bobby, I miss you, and it's a shame I couldn't share this moment with you. But in any case, across 110th Street, we had the late Bobby Womack. That was a soundtrack from, of course, 1997's breakthrough, I think, for Tarantino. Most people seem to think Reservoir Dogs or Pulp Fiction, but for me it was Jackie Brown with the wonderful Pam Grier. And tonight, of course, I have got in the studio with me a Clayton, also known as Claytox. Welcome.
Good evening. This music is very peaceful. Am I on the right show?
It's peaceful at the moment, isn't it?
Okay.
Well, this is actually not from the Jackie Brown soundtrack. Mm-hmm. This one, let me check, it is actually from the, what we've got is it's from the Django soundtrack. So it's a little bit of Louis Bacalov and some Ennio Morricone, and Inglourious Basterds as well, Un Amico by Ennio Morricone. So we've got a bit of music in the background throughout the show tonight, enjoying and celebrating Quentin Tarantino. And like I said, we'll be playing a bit of a chat with him soon about topics like females in his films and race, the race issue in his films, and particularly the new one, The Hateful Eight, which started last Thursday.
Which we got along together to see. It was our first film screening together, actually. That was quite exciting for me.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I think so.
Is it? Hmm. Oh, yes, right. Yeah, because you've been going off on your own, doing things.
Yeah, yeah. I've been getting the free tickets and going.
Well, I've been suffering at work. But anyway, so we saw the preview at the wonderful Rivoli, and one of the few theatres in Melbourne that has got the ability to play the 70mm. So there's that one, the Astor, and the Sun over at Yarraville, which he turned up out of the blue.
He did.
Last week.
That was the same day that I'm going to go with we met him, because I briefly met him.
He looked at you and said,
I need to go to the bathroom. Yeah. Restroom.
The restroom now.
Yeah, so I'm taking that. Mm. That's my meeting with Quentin Tarantino. Yeah. I'm fine with that.
You drove him to the restroom.
That's right, yeah.
So to speak. No, it was a really engaging and fascinating man, and I just love his art, his film, his cinema. So, yeah, so we'll be talking about The Hateful Eight, the new ones, some old ones. In the background, you can hear the theme, one of the themes from Inglourious Basterds, based on the 1978 film, but kind of a reinvention, I suppose, of what would happen if there was an alternate reality to the Second World War, if Hitler and all the horrible Nazis had their dues early and were taken out by a group of guerrilla-fighting Jews who just wiped them out. It's pretty awesome. Great film, personally.
It's one of the ones I haven't caught yet, so I'm definitely going to check that out. I only watched Django Unchained this morning, actually. So, research. Oh. I love research that involves watching TV.
Django takes a while to sink in.
It does. I really loved it, though. I thought there's certain words you sort of... And I was okay with from Hateful Eight.
Yeah, and we must remind viewers, I should say listeners tonight, that there is a lot of words that are possibly considered foul and despicable and crude and revolting and etc. But it is part of the genre. I mean, that is Tarantino. That is what he does. That is what he uses in a realistic manner.
And context is key. So they're used very much in context.
Yeah,
and
so there's
realistic.
A lot of the F word, the MF word, the N word.
Yes.
Okay, just warning there. But we'll play the warnings throughout the show tonight. What else? Oh, there's been a lot happening this week. Yeah, look, Jackie Brown is probably my favourite.
I'm a Kill Bill boy.
Really? One or two?
Both. I look at them as a whole package, which is how he did intend them to originally be, but then he split them up because they were going to be too long.
I think it was like 8 or 9 months apart, which was amazing, because I remember seeing number one here in Melbourne and going, oh my God. Oh my God, I have to see the next one. Hurry up. And I was like, it was just torture waiting 8 or 9 months. It doesn't seem long, but it felt like really a long disconnect time.
And a lot of people didn't like the second one because it's so different from the first one. And I just
see them as a package like you.
Same, exactly.
They sort of blur together in a way. Beatrix Diddo. Mm-hmm. Kiddo. Mm-hmm. I was thinking of a pussy wagon, but Uma Thurman. Now, if you have a favourite, how can people message us there, Clayton?
They can message in at onair@joy.org.au or they can send in a message at 0427-JOY949. And don't call the desk because there's no one there.
There's no one there that we can see right now. So, yes, onair@joy.org.au. SMS 0427JOY949. You can also tweet us at Queer Geeks of Oz. That's the handle. Let us know. And let us know what your favourite Tarantino film is. Do you have a favourite? If you don't have a favourite, I don't know why you don't have a favourite. You should have one. There's something for everyone in the Tarantino. This is film number eight.
This is number eight, yes.
Technically nine.
He's complicated, man.
Because he wrote the
man.
Screenplay for True Lies by Scott Ridley.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think...
Oh, not Scott Ridley,
From Dusk Till Dawn probably doesn't get in there either, actually, I don't think, in his eighth
Tony
film.
Scott.
Oh, sorry, yes. Because
His brother, of course, is Ridley Scott.
Mm-hmm. It was a Scott, yes.
Late Tony Scott, sadly, is no longer with us. Mm. He also directed The Hunger, and he directed True Lies. So there you go, a little bit of that kind of trivia can go a long way for some. Mm. Anyway, I don't know what I'm saying. It's been such a long week.
From Dusk Till Dawn is actually possibly my favourite. If you don't count.
Well, you haven't seen Inglourious Basterds.
I haven't.
Yet. You might change.
Kill Bill
is
definitely my favourite full Tarantino film, but I love From Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah.
I love the fact that it's two films in one.
Mm.
You go from one type of film, and then halfway through, it's suddenly a different type of film. And
what's it about? It has been such a long time.
It's just a couple of. Thieves kidnap a family and then take them over the border and end up getting in trouble with a lot of vampires.
Yeah, so it's a vampire movie.
Yeah, and there's almost the exact halfway mark where it goes from being a kidnapping film to a vampire film. And
yeah,
it's just
a bit of twisted there.
Yeah, a good change in relationships over the period of the film as well. And yeah, I enjoyed.
Yeah, well, he stars in it too. And we'll go over some of the films that he has appeared in, because he's appeared in a lot of films, and 10 that we count, or including some television that he's appeared in. But we'll talk about that a bit later when I find the notes.
And if you squeeze over onto our Facebook page, there's a picture of him, one of his early appearances.
Yeah, and got 1988, Golden Girls as an Elvis impersonator. You have to guess which one, so go to the Sci-Fi and Screen Facebook
which
page.
Which colour outfit is he wearing?
Oh.
That's the best way to tell us.
A little bit beige, isn't it?
No, I didn't mean you now.
Oh, okay, right.
Them
right.
When they've got.
Just look for a big forehead. That's usually how you spot Tarantino.
Yeah.
And what a brilliant forehead, because inside that forehead, of course,
the
is
Tarantino
the great
brain.
Great brain. All right, so tonight is Tarantino Day, night. Let us know your favourite, 0427JOY949 or onair@joy.org.au. You're on Joy.
Warning, tonight's episode of Sci-Fi and Scream contains strong language. Listener discretion is advised.
Cause I'm a bad motherfucker.
I'm still alive, motherfucker! What?
Adult supervision is required.
Ah, yes, Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy. Now we've got a bit of Tarantino talking about Daisy Domergue and what her role is. Who is she in The Hateful Eight? This is Joy.
Girl, you'll be a woman soon. I love you so much, can't count all the ways I died for you, girl, and all they can say is, he's not your kind.
Hi, Quentin Tarantino. I'm Sonia from Sci-Fi and Squim on Joy 94.9. And I just want to congratulate you on The Hateful Eight.
Oh, what a nice thing to say. Thank you, Sonia.
Wonderful film. Very good. But I wanted to ask a question, of course, about
the role of women in your films, and in particular The Hateful Eight.
Yeah, sure.
Is the main, one of the main protagonists, of course, is the wonderful Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is great. Mm-hmm. And as Daisy. What is the importance of having, in this case, just one female this time in the film?
Oh, well, you know, that's interesting. Interesting the way you pose that. You know, it's interesting because when I first came up with the idea, I just thought it was, especially when I first came up with the idea, I didn't really know 100% where the story was going. Mm-hmm. I had a really good idea about what's going on in the stagecoach, but exactly what they'd find when they got to Minnie's haberdashery, which is where they end up, and who would be there, and exactly how everything would fall out, I didn't quite know. So it was like the first chapter led to the second chapter, which led to everything else. So I just kind of started off with the idea of this brutal bounty hunter with a female prisoner in tow, and then the and then a black bounty hunter coming on board, and then just letting them kind of hash it out. And I actually thought a female prisoner could be a very interesting dynamic. You know, to the piece, especially the other male characters kind of gathered around her and stuff. But as I was going on, I wanted to make it, I didn't want to, she is a woman, and absolutely, and I even like the idea that, you know, she's smaller. She's actually a petite woman. All right, that wasn't what I wrote, but I liked it in the course of the movie. I like the fact that she's a petite woman. I like the fact that the other male characters are stronger than her. Ooh, you know, she can't, you know, really fight back in that regard. She is stuck in that scenario. She only has her wits to go with on her as far as that was concerned. At the same time, I didn't want to treat her like a lady. I didn't want, and I don't, all right, I didn't want to make any concessions to her as a female character. If it hadn't have been Daisy Domergue, if the character had been a character named Big Bill Shelley, and he was 300 pounds, nothing in the scenario would have changed. Nothing in the dynamic would have changed per se to it, but it did make it more interesting and provocative and maybe even painful, all right, and provocative that there was a woman in that role instead.
Mm. Well, when you see her getting violence against her, it's shocking in the first chapter.
Yeah, especially especially in that, you know, especially that first one.
Yes.
When the first one happens, there's meant to be a ripple through the audience. But, you know, part of that ripple is supposed to be, is like, oh man, that John Ruth is a brutal bastard.
Yes.
Well, he is.
Doing his job.
Yeah. Yep.
What Tarantino was saying about Daisy Domergue, the only character that's female in the new film, The Hateful Eight, the 70mm epic that is out now. She's not treated like a lady. She's not treated at all like that. There's a total indifference to her being of her gender, and in a way that is accurate and quite realistic, I believe. And there is violence towards her. Just warning about that. If you do see the film, you will be shocked. The whole idea is for you to be shocked. And our modern eyes, I suppose, our modern feminist, our modern, you know, egalitarian eyes, we see that as terribly wrong, and it is. But he didn't want to emphasize that too much. He didn't want her to be seen as some sort of poor Joan of Arc sacrificial lamb, because she's turns out, without spoiling too much, that she is bad to the bone.
She's one of the Hateful Eight.
She is. She's,
so, yeah.
She is hateful, and she is... well, there's twists in there. Yeah. She knows something that others don't know, and she's very manipulative. So, hey,
And it's an interesting twist on feminism as well, because the fact she is treated in the same way as the other characters, and she's not this, you know, she's, oh, we've got to be careful, she's a woman. That's actually really good for feminism in its own way, even though she keeps getting beaten up.
Yeah.
So it's, it's a strange twist, I think.
It's a strange twist, and of course, Jennifer Jason Leigh is incredible in this role.
Amazing.
She is a diminutive, tiny, petite woman, as Quentin has said in the interview there. But at the same time, she can't be messed with. At the same time, he wanted to show those real contrasts and the environment that we find all of the characters in. It's blizzard. It's minus 35 degrees or something. It's Wyoming, the Colorado Rockies. It's winter. It's absolutely, you know, there's no real life out there. There's just these eight people that turn up at Minnie's haberdashery. They turn up there, and we know that they've, you know, got some prizes on them, and one of them is alive, and that's Daisy. She's a wanted woman for being a part of the Domague gang.
The Bounty, I believe, is what you're...
They're pretty bad people, but there's also three dead bodies on top of the coach that are Bounty as well, but dead. You don't get as much as you do for live. And they walk into the situation, a mini haberdashery, and with John Roof and... what's his name? Major Warren, played wonderfully by Samuel L. Jackson. Kurt Russell, of course, plays John Roof, the bounty hunter, with his big walrus moustache. And then they walk to that haberdashery, and it's just freezing cold. It's inhabited by people that maybe aren't supposed to be there, these men that are there. The usual occupants apparently have gone visiting a relative around the corner, which around the corner in Wyoming is probably about 60 miles away.
And given the transport at the time, it would have taken a while to get there. So.
Put your snowshoes on. Mm-hmm. So look, it's got all these incongruities and all these question marks throughout the most of the film, and it's in different chapters too.
I love that too, by the way.
Yeah,
I really, I think the chapter thing worked really well, and it's something that does pop up in his films, and it's something I enjoy.
Yeah, so we've got six chapters altogether, I think.
Yes,
they're made out to chapter one, Last Stage to Red Rock, so that's where they're heading to hang Daisy for her crimes. Then there's chapter two, Son of a Gun. So we have Chris Mannix, who's sort of like a renegade from a lost cause, a militiaman from the rebel side or the Confederate side, or, you know, the rebel side of the Confederates during the Civil War, because this is just after the Civil War, a few years, maybe a dozen years later, I suppose. And he's in conflict immediately with someone like... Samuel L. Jackson's character, who was from the North or from the Yankee side.
Yeah.
And he's still got his blue uniform with the yellow strip, and he's very much the major, isn't he? He's an aging major, and he's got a few secrets as well. So everyone in this film has got secrets and lies and hidden things about who they are and their past. And so Mannix, played wonderfully by, what's his name, Walter Goggins, does a great job. And, he was in Django, of course, and you might remember him from that police show. I can't think of the name of it. It's terrible. The Shield, actually. He was in The Shield many years ago.
I feel like his character in... They could have... Although...
He's
the character from Django, and this could have almost been the same character.
But yes.
Not in a bad way.
Just a really creative way of writing the game that Tarantino's done. So he reuses some people from Django. We've got Bruce Dern in there. Of course, Samuel L. Jackson again. And they're there at Minnie's Haberdashery. Chapter 3, and there's Chapter 4 where Domague's got a secret. And so all the way the film is broken up into these parts, and these parts sort of add up to something which we're not going to give away, but of course it's all about secrets and identity and misgivings and misconceptions people have, and race, of course. And I think that brings us to the next segment of the interview with Quentin Tarantino. And this one is about just that. It's about something called the Lincoln Letter, and it's about race in America then, and perhaps race in America representing race in America now. What did you think?
I think there's definitely a crossover. Our world has changed, and it has not changed at the same time.
Exactly. So. This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy.
What make a man brave a blizzard, kill in cold blood? I'm sure I don't know. You'd be surprised what a man would do. You starting to see pictures, ain't you?
Got room for one more?
I ain't too anxious to be handing out rides.
Real trusting fella, huh?
Not so much. Ain't no way I'm spending a couple of nights under a roof with somebody I don't know who they are. So who are you?
Okay, everybody, hear this. I'm taking this woman to hang.
Rewards
$10,000. That money's mine, boys.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Hold on! You think I'll make cahoots with that fella or her?
That's my problem, boy. I don't know.
One of them fellas will kill everybody in here.
Now we're talking!
Let's slow it down. Let's slow it way down.
When you get to hell, tell them Daisy sent you.
No one said this job's supposed to be easy.
Nobody said it's supposed to be that hard, neither.
I just have a question. The Lincoln letter that appears throughout the film sort of guides the Samuel Jackson character, of course. Is that a metaphor for yourself that you're saying about race relations in the U.S. at the moment or historically?
Well, it's one of those weird, it's one of those weird subtexts that becomes text. You know what I mean? As the story goes on. But that was an evolving thing. It was an evolving thing. I ended up writing this script differently than I've ever written another script before. Normally I write these kind of big, long, novelish kind of books. And then there it is. Boom. And it's one process, and I get to the end. And then I usually, and they're not like scripts. They're like books, and I'm kind of adapting them into the movie. All the time. Here, I didn't want to do that. Here, I wanted it to be more like a theater piece. And but I didn't want to. I wanted to write it three different times before I actually said it was finished. And the idea behind that was to just spend time with the material. Don't be so quick to be having it done. Don't be, okay, now just because I got to the end, that means I'm done. I wanted to have the experience of telling the story three different times, literally writing it out as the one. Dun, 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 on a typewriter. Go through that experience. And one of the aspects about that is I could explore things, but I didn't have to take them all the way to the very end. I can just explore it, touch base on it, then leave it. And then just let it sit. Let myself think about it. Then I go to another draft, and then I can take it a little further. And what I mean by that is in the case of the Lincoln letter, in the very first draft, it was only brought up in the stagecoach, and that was it.
Okay.
Because I wasn't really ready to go forward with it yet. I wanted to sit on it. What does that mean? Well, what can I do with this? Let's not be so quick right now. Let's just let it sit. And I think that by the time I get through telling the entire story and I get ready to do it again, I'll have more ideas about that. And I even remember my agent. You know, after he read the script, he goes, you know, that Lincoln letter is a really good idea. I think you should do something more with it. And I go, oh, well, I intend to. I'm just kind of not ready yet. But it ended up being a very important aspect as far as, like, how Major Warren is able to negotiate his way through a hostile society that puts him apart from other people like him and puts him apart from a lot of the other white people that he deals with, because this letter gives him a sense of exceptionalism.
And protection.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it also just, like, you know, and it softens the white people around him.
That's a bingo!
Warning, tonight's episode of Sci-Fi and Scream contains strong language. Listener discretion is advised.
Cause I'm a bad motherfucker.
I'm still alive, motherfucker! Mother, what?
Adult supervision is required.
Look, I don't
don't know what futuristic utopia you live in, but the world I live in, a bitch need a gun.
You can't get around the fact that people who carry guns tend to get shot more than people who don't.
And you can't get around the fact that if I go down to the laundry room in my building at midnight enough times, I might get my ass raped.
Don't do your laundry at midnight.
Fuck that. I want to do my laundry whenever the fuck I want to do my laundry.
There are other things you can carry other than a gun. Pepper spray.
Motherfucker try to rape me? I don't want to give him a skin rash. I want to shut that nigga down.
How about a knife at least?
Yeah. You know what happens to motherfuckers carry knives? They get shot. Look, if I ever become a famous actress, I won't carry a gun. I'll hire me a dude dirt nigga, and he'll carry the gun. And when shit goes down, I'll sit back and laugh. But until that day, it's Wild West, motherfucker.
Death Proof, of course. With Chick Habit, April May, Clayton here. No, I'm not Clayton. Clayton's there, and that's his favourite. Why is it your favourite?
It's just a song I love. It's my favourite song about Chick Habits, maybe.
Yeah. And of course, Death Proof came out 2007. Tarantino's feminist film, I think it's believed to be his most feminist film. Representation of women in it, and certainly was the most shocking film I've ever seen in a long time.
Kurt Russell as well.
Kurt Russell, of course, as stuntman Mike, as Warren, who is Quentin Tarantino in the film, says. When he's asked by Rose McGowan's character, who's stuntman Mike? And Warren or Tarantino goes, he's a stuntman. He loves stuntmen. He loves stunt people.
Yes.
And he loves Zoe Bell, who appears in Death Proof as well. And we've got a little segment about her too. So we'll play that in a moment.
She pops up in Django Unchained as well. But she doesn't actually have any lines.
She's mute in it, isn't she?
Yeah, well, she's got a face mask for the whole time. It's just she has very striking eyes, so notice those.
Eyes or eye, did you say?
Eyes, I think. Eyes.
She's got two of them.
Yes. I think I said eyes. Anyway.
I think you did.
Death Proof, you were going to say.
Yeah, I just love it. And I love the soundtrack. It's brilliant. We've got people like Jack Nitzsche from 1960s films, like this soundtrack in the background. Yes, Roadster from T-Rex. There's a really strong influence of road movies and car movies for car enthusiasts. They talk about doing The Mast, which is a very dangerous Turning Point did it, actually, the film Turning Point in the early 70s. It's a very dangerous technique. Do not try it at home, where you lie on the bonnet of the car with a leather belt going usually through the windscreen side so you've got something to hold on to and you sort of swerve about very dangerously and ominously on the car bonnet. That's what Zoe Bell actually does in the movie itself.
Oh, wow.
She's very talented.
Very.
Very dangerous.
Of course, it's a companion piece to Robert Rodriguez.
Grindhouse one.
Yeah. Planet Terror?
Planet Terror.
Yeah.
I think. Mm. Yeah, it's been ages since I've seen that.
Yeah, me too. So, but they work really well together.
Yeah.
But they've never been very well released, I don't think, to be like a companion big box set of both or...
Mm.
Especially, not here. No.
Not in Australasia. They wouldn't release them at the same bill. So that's really disappointing. Once again, interfering with our cinema and viewingship and fanship.
Because it was designed as a big piece that had all these trailers.
Well, it was designed to play together, but they didn't do that. So
it was very annoying.
They fucked up. Mm. And, you know, that's fucking outrageous. If you are a cinemaphile, it's bullshit. So, anyway. But you can go online and watch it.
I agree. I just use different words.
Yeah, so. I know, aren't you good? There was a warning to this show tonight.
Somewhere. We may just put one on you,
definitely. Here's Tarantino about Zoe Bell speaking to me last week in Melbourne, doing the press junket for, of course, The Hateful Eight. You're on Sci-Fi and Screen.
Mate. So, back home?
I'm sorry, where's home? Australia, right?
Mm. What do you mean by that, mate?
Zoe's from New Zealand, and you never, I repeat, never call a Kiwi an Aussie.
That is, unless you want your ass kicked.
I'm so sorry. I really am.
Oh, that's okay. We're just taking the piss out of you, mate. Auckland, to answer your question.
That's great. You're working with Zoe Bell again.
Yeah, yeah.
Good to see her. She's a Kiwi, so.
Yeah.
Love her.
Oh, no. She's wonderful. No, I love. I love working with her. She's such a wonderful presence, and especially with a movie full of so many hateful bastards.
Yeah.
All right. It's nice to have such a sunny disposition girl as her. But also, part of the thing was I knew that if I cast Zoe, she'd be able to learn how to drive a 6-horse team.
Did she?
Yeah, that's her.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's nobody else. That's her. That's where she got cast.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
If he lets us take it out on our own, I want to play Ship's Mast.
Oh, hell no!
Down?
Ain't no way I'm doing Ship's Mast.
Christ's sake.
Don't blaspheme.
Sorry.
Now, what did you say after the last time?
Look, I know what I said.
What did you say?
I know I said we shouldn't do this
No,
again,
you didn't say we shouldn't. You said we ain't ever gonna do that again.
Yeah,
but my ass. You said not only are we never gonna play Ship's Mast again, but you also said if you ever do what you try to do now, to not only refuse, but that I had permission to physically restrain your ass if necessary. Now, did you or did you not say that?
What?
No. Answer the question, motherfucker. Did you or did you not say that?
Yes, I said that. However,
whatever with your however.
Warning, tonight's episode of Sci-Fi and Screen contains strong language. Listener discretion is advised.
I ain't never seen no on no horse before.
You and your come out right now with your hands over your head.
I wish to purchase one of your gals.
This language warning is brought to you by the letter N.
Face!
No!
Put the gun down!
Hear your names. Mr. White, Mr. Blonde, Mr. Pink.
Why am I Mr. Pink?
Who cares what your name is?
Yeah, that's easy for you to say. You're Mr. White. You have a cool-sounding name.
That's gotta work.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling there's something right.
What happens if the manager won't give you the diamonds?
Cut off one of his fingers. The little one.
Ladies and gentlemen, now the moment you've all been waiting for. It's a world-famous Jackrabbit Slim's Twist Contest. One lucky couple will win this handsome trophy that Marilyn here is holding. Now, who will be our first contestants?
Right here. Want to dance?
No.
I do believe Marcellus, my husband, your boss, told you to take me out and do whatever I wanted. And now I want to dance. I want to win. I want that trophy. All so right. Dance good.
All right.
I'm here for our first contestant. Now let's meet our first contestants here this evening. Young lady, what is your name?
Mrs. Mia Wallace.
And how about your fella here?
Lucy Vega.
All right, let's see what you can do. Take it away.
Okay, ready? Everybody settle and action. Pam Grier is...
Jackie Brown.
Pam Grier is...
Jackie Brown.
Pamela Grier is...
Jackie Brown.
Here we go.
Bang, bang, my baby shot me down.
As you know, I'm quite keen on comic books, especially the ones about superheroes. I find the whole mythology surrounding superheroes fascinating. Take my favorite superhero, Superman. Not a great comic book, not particularly well drawn. But the mythology. The mythology is not only great, it's unique.
How long does this shit take to go into effect?
About 2 minutes. Just long enough for me to finish my point. Now, a staple of the superhero mythology is there's the superhero and there's the alter ego. Batman is actually Bruce Wayne. Spider-Man is actually Peter Parker. When that character wakes up in the morning, he's Peter Parker. He has to put on a costume to become Spider-Man. And it is in that characteristic Superman stands alone. Superman didn't become Superman. Superman was born Superman. When Superman wakes up in the morning, he's Superman. His alter ego is Clark Kent. His outfit with the big red S, that's the blanket he was wrapped in as a baby when the Kents found him. Those are his clothes. What Kent wears, the glasses, the business suit, that's the costume. That's the costume Superman wears to blend in with us. Clark Kent is how Superman views us. And what are the characteristics of Clark Kent? He's weak. He's unsure of himself. He's a coward. Clark Kent is Superman's critique on the whole human race. Sort of like Beatrix Kiddo and Mrs. Tommy Plimpton.
So, the point emerges.
You would have worn the costume of Arlene Plimpton, but you were born Beatrix Kiddo. And every morning when you woke up, you'd still be Beatrix Kiddo.
My pussy wagon died on me.
The pussy day. Bill shot you in the head, no?
Yes.
I would have been much nicer. I would have just cut your face. You must forgive me.
Thank you.
Yes, Sci-Fi and Squeam here. It's Tarantino Day night with Clayton Winshurst, Claytox, and myself, the Squeamer, and looking at Tarantino. And did a bit of a medley, a bunch of some of the highlights there of a career that has spanned a couple of, well, three decades now. Pretty amazing. Mm. And, of course, that include Reservoir Dogs from 1992. We've got a bit of Death Proof again there, Kill Bill 1 and 2, of course, and a bit of Django as well, more recently, 2013-14. How to pick which one?
Or this morning for me.
Oh, this morning for you. And Inglourious Basterds as well. How to pick these... this plethora of pastiche of pop culture of, you know, I mean, Pulp Fiction, starting with P.
That was definitely my first.
Yeah, well, that was the first exposure for many people. Mm-hmm. It was his first major feature that he had all the attention and brought to, because he brought two big stars. One of them, an aging, flagging star that he brought back from the dead, pretty much, John Travolta. And the other one, a rising star in her own right, Uma Thurman, of course. Brilliant ensemble cast, including Bruce Willis, who can forget that. And that watch, of course. And the soundtrack. The repository of nostalgia and sentiments that span over 50, 60 years. And every single one of those songs from either Reservoir Dogs particular and Pulp Fiction probably got back on the charts because of these two single films, and especially Pulp Fiction. It brought faith back, I think, to art film, as we had just a huge hot mess of action films for so long. And then suddenly we had an American film that we could have, I think, some, you know, respect for, again, in American cinema. Layton.
I love the Urge Overkill song, or their version, yes, of Girl, You'll Be a Woman Soon.
I know. And it's Neil Diamond's song, isn't it?
I think, yes, I think it's originally. Yeah. So it's just a great song, and they do a very good version. So,
yeah,
and it's
pretty cool.
Yeah.
And so he brought in the whole 90s eclectic, you know, grunge and sentimentality, brought it all together beautifully, I think.
And that is an aspect of his films, is you can never get quite too relaxed with the music. Like, you never get stuck in any particular style.
Any genre, yeah.
Yeah, even in The Hateful Eight, there's some surprise songs in there which
Ennio,
work really
and
well.
And he works with Ennio properly this time.
Yeah.
Because they weren't going to work together after Django. He was Ennio Morricone, of course, who worked on many wonderful, brilliant spaghetti westerns, as they're called. Sergio Leone films like A Fistful of Dollars and Once Upon a Time in America, and so on. But he argued that he wasn't ever going to work with Tarantino again, and then lo and behold, here they are doing The Hateful Eight, which was great to do that soundtrack.
And I think he was saying, maybe not in our interview, but that he really met him for the first time during this, the
making. They became friends.
Absolutely. So that's a
which
great
is
thing.
Great. I think it's great when you become, as a fan, you become an even greater fan if you become friends.
Definitely.
With the person you idolise, worship, or stalk, or whatever it might be that you're into.
How many people stalk you?
None.
None? Okay.
That I know of that are still alive.
Okay.
Yeah, no, let us know if you do have a favourite. We've got a few minutes left, a few moments, 0427JOY949, or on air at joy.org.au. Let us know your favourite. There are so many. It's hard to beat, really. And the characters can morph into each other, but... who would be your favourite character out of all of the Tarantino films?
The Bride.
Yep.
Kill Bill.
Beatrix.
Yeah, Beatrix. Kiddo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who, she's close. She's close.
Yeah. Who you don't find out the name of till quite near the end of the
film.
Yeah,
true.
So,
For me, it would be Melanie Laurent's character, Shoshana. She plays a Jewish escapee from the Nazis in Inglourious Basterds. She comes pretty close, 2009, she comes pretty close to that. It's a surprisingly violent film. It's like Game of Thrones set in World War II, I guess. But yeah, like I said, it's an alternate reality. It could happen, it should have happened, it would have been great if it had, but oh well. And it's got Brad Pitt, which was a total surprise as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Total surprise.
And I've seen bits of it, and he certainly bits of Pitt, yes, he does a good job.
Yeah.
I also have to give it a shout out to another song in one of the other films. Mm-hmm. The version of the zombie song "She's Not There" at the end of Kill Bill 2, so beautifully used. It's just a, it's a song that just samples the sort of chorus of it, but it's just absolutely wonderful.
Cool. Mm. Yeah. Well, Sci-Fi and Scream, Tarantino. We've got a little bit left of Tarantino time, and don't worry, it will be podcast. The full interview will be podcast, and there's a video to companion with it, which will also be out online as soon as Clayton does it. As soon as we both do it. All right? Hang in there.
As soon as you finish watching it.
That's right. Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy.
Ooh, that's a bingo.
Oh, that indeed is it for the Tarantino evening. So we will have it podcasted fully in a few days' time. So give us a bit of time to do that. Hey, Clayton.
Absolutely. We'll get it done and we'll get...
I forgot to do our 10 out of 10. I'm giving The Hateful Eight... I'm giving it a 7 out of 10.
No, about 7 to 8, seven and a half.
Yeah, yeah. It's worth it. And it's out through Roadshow Films Australia. So check it out at cinemas where it's available, 70mm, hopefully. And here is the last of Tarantino on, and I promise people this, on his favourite David Bowie song. What is it? Let's find out. Thanks, Clayton.
Thank you.
So good night. Quick, hasn't it?
Time flies when you're having Tarantino.
I know. It's been razor fast. And good night. And just lastly for music, myself, with the passing of the great David Bowie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You used an Inglourious Basterds, the Cat People soundtrack.
Absolutely, yeah. I actually regret the fact that I met him once a long time ago, and I always wanted to know what he thought about my use of Cat People in Inglourious Basterds, and now I'll never know now.
Damn it. Would it be your favourite?
What?
Song?
Okay. Oh, the song of his?
Yeah.
It probably would be. It'd be a toss-up between that and Young Americans.
Awesome. Thank you.
And I'll always remember watching him on Soul Train.
Oh, first white person?
Not quite. Gino Vanelli was the first white person.
Okay. All right. Excellent.
But it was a big deal when he was on.
Well, it was the first David Bowie appearance.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Excellent. Love that. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Have to die for the 50 more. Oh. make me break down and cry.
Tonight's episode of Sci-Fi and Scream contains strong language. Listener discretion is advised.
I ain't never seen no on the horse before.
You and your come out right now with your hands over your head.
I wish to purchase one of your gals.
This language warning is brought to you by the letter N.
Is there anybody in this place you could vouch for to give me a ride home?
Fair lady, your chariot awaits.
You've been eavesdropping?
Eavesdropping and can't help it here. I think I belong in the latter category.
So, icy hot, you offering me a ride home?
I'm offering you a lift. If when I'm ready to leave, you are too.
And when are you thinking about leaving?
Truthfully, I'm not thinking about it. When I do, you will be the first to know.
Will you be able to drive later?
I know looks can be deceiving. But I'm a teetotaler. I've been drinking club soda and lime all night, and now I'm building up to my big drink.
Which is what?
Virgin piña colada.
Okay. Why would someone who doesn't drink spend hours at a bar drinking water?
You know, a bar offers all kind of things other than alcohol.
Really? Like what?
Women. Nacho grande platters. The fellowship of some fascinating individuals like Warren here. Alcohol is just a lubricant for all the individual encounters that a barroom offers.
Ooh, is that cowboy wisdom?
I'm not a cowboy, Pam. I'm a stuntman. But that's a very easy mistake to make.
How do you know my name?
When you were talking with Warren, couldn't help it over here.
Fair enough. So what's your name, Icy?
Stuntman Mike.
Stuntman Mike's your name.
You ask anybody.
Hey, Warren, who is this guy?
Stuntman Mike.
And who the hell is Stuntman Mike?
He's Stuntman.
K-Billy Super Sounds of the 70s Weekend just keeps on coming with this little ditty that reached up to 21 in May of 1970. The George Baker Selection, Little Green Bag.
Aldo the Apache, you got heard about the Bear Jew.
I heard of the Bear Jew.
What'd you hear?
Beats German soldiers with a club.
He bashes the brains in with a baseball bat, what he does. And Werner, I'm going to ask you one last goddamn time. If you still respectfully refuse, I'm calling the Bear Jew over. He's going to take that big bat of his, and he's going to beat your ass to death with it.
Fuck you. And your Jew dogs.
Actually, Werner, we're all tickled to hear you say that. Quite frankly, watching Donnie beat Nazis to death is close we ever get to going to the movies. Donnie!
Yeah?
Guy's German here wants to die for country. Oblige him.
Thank you.
Tooth.
Slavery in a real kind of way. They act like it was a very short period of our history that, you know, wasn't as bad as you people make it out to be, you know. And, you know, if it wasn't for slavery, you guys wouldn't be here. And, you know, you worked in the sun, you picked cotton, you know, but they don't deal with the fact that we were treated as property, that sometimes was expendable property, that you use fear and violence to keep these people in line, you know, down to doing things like taking pregnant women out and standing them in front of, you know, other pregnant women and cutting the baby out of one of them and stomping it to death so that other folks will know, don't do that, you know, or cutting the guy's feet off because he ran away. So to deal with it in an honest way and the horrific way that it's there is just Quentin's way of saying, you know, this is what happened and these are the kind of odds that Django had to go up against to get the woman that he loves and save her.
I respectfully refuse, sir.
Hear that?
Yes.
Sergeant Donnie Donowitz. You might know him better by his nickname, the Bear Jew. Now, have you heard Aldo the Apache? You got heard about the Bear Jew.
I heard of the Bear Jew.
What'd you hear?
Beats German soldiers with a club.
He bashes the brains in with a baseball bat, what he does. And Werner, I'm gonna ask you one last goddamn time. If you still respectfully refuse, I'm calling the Bear Jew over. He's gonna take that big bat of his, and he's gonna beat your ass to death with it.
Fuck you.
And your Jew dogs!
Actually, we're all tickled to hear you say that. Quite frankly, watching Donnie beat Nazis to death is close we ever get to going to the movies. Donnie!
Yeah?
Guy's German here wants to die for country. Oblige him.
Damn, Jimmy, this some serious gourmet shit. Me and Vincent would have been satisfied with some freeze-dried Taster's Choice, right? And he springs this serious gourmet shit on us. What flavor is this?
Knock it off, Julie.
What?
I don't need you to tell me how fucking good my coffee is, okay? I'm the one who buys it. I know how good it is. When Bonnie goes shopping, she buys shit. I buy the gourmet expensive stuff because when I drink it, I want to taste it. But you know what's on my mind right now? It ain't the coffee in my kitchen. It's the dead nigger in my garage.
Oh, Jimmy, don't even worry about it.
No, don't think about anything. I want to ask you a question. When you came pulling in here, did you notice a sign out in the front of my house that said dead nigger storage?
Jimmy, you know I ain't seen no shit.
Did you notice a sign in the front of my house that said dead nigger storage?
No, I didn't.
You know why you didn't see that sign?
Why?
Because it ain't there, because storing dead niggers ain't my fucking business. That's why.
Well, Jimmy, we're not going to store them.
No. Don't you fucking realize, man, that if Bonnie comes home and finds a dead body in her house, I'm going to get divorced. All right? No marriage counseling, no trial separation. I'm going to get fucking divorced, okay? And I don't want to get fucking divorced.
Been listening to a podcast of Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. Check out joy.org.au/sci-fi and scream for more.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.